because I think that it's very important. And part of it is something that I've said a number of times in the past, based on the Rambam, the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, that I do that this year with you. The end of Hilchos Me'ilah. Memayin Yulam. Okay, so you could start. The Rambam at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah has three approaches, at least the way I read that Rambam, three approaches which are equally inappropriate, which are equally inappropriate in the manner in which any particular Jew approaches the Torah, and the need to do that is very, very fundamental. We have a text in front of us, and the text begs for manipulation, for analysis, for interpretation, for expansion. You have to do something with it. And the particular and unique nature of a person that he wants to be mechadesh, that he wants to add, to incrementally improve upon the past, is a very basic instinct. If a person is given a choice, b'derech klal, between repeating what his Rebbeim said and saying something on his own, the instinct is to say on your own. You have to control that instinct. I think Hasidim have a better ability to do that because they have a natural acceptance that they are batel gamri to the Rebbe. So memela, that attitude makes them feel much more subservient to the previous texts and to the tzaddikim and to the gedolim that at least that belong to the dynasty that they are part of, that they belong to. And memela, I think that attitude transcends their immediate dynasty and to other Sifre Chassidus and to Sfarim in general. There's a certain obedience that comes out of self-effacement, you know, of the Bitul Atzmius that every Chassid has, genuine Chassid has to the Rebbe. So have sometimes many Gedolei Yisrael who were Chassidim, and because they were Chassidim, they would be Mevatel themselves to the Rebbe Mikol V'chol, even though they were actually greater than the Rebbe in Torah and in Yediyas HaTorah and in the ability to convey Torah and to analyze Torah. But us Litvakis, you know, we have this tremendous instinct to be Mechadish. We want to create, we want to... So the Rambam has this warning, and I was thinking to myself that all of Bracious, in particular, Bracious more than any other of the Chumashim, has this danger. But when you come to Parshas Vayeshev, and the whole Machloikis between Yosef and his brothers, there's a strong... See, what's the difference between Cain and Hevel, for example, and Yosef and the brothers? So I don't mean the difference between them, I mean the difference in the presentation. So you have Cain and Hevel is not only short, it's truncated. Truncated mamash. For example, what do I mean by truncated? The pasuk stops short of itself. It doesn't. You don't even finish the self pasuk. Here, you have in the beginning, in the story of Cain and Hevel, a clear picture that Cain and Hevel have a problem. There's a problem. But we don't know what the problem is. We have like this. Vahimi keitz yomim, vayovi Cain mipriyo adoma minchol Hashem, vehevel hevi gam hu, mibechoros sono umechel vehen, vayisha Hashem el hevel veel minchoso. Vel Cain vel minchoso lo sha'a, vayicha le Cain mioid, vayipulu ponov. So Hashem has a dialogue, has a comment. It's not really a dialogue because it doesn't say that Cain responded and there isn't any further communication. But Hashem reacts to Cain, vayicha le Cain mod vayipulu ponov, and he explains to him, Lama chora loch v'lama nafalu panecha, halo im teitiv seis, v'imlo seitiv la pesach hatos roveitz, v'ilecha teshukaso v'atotim sholbo. Now, it's a very cryptic pasuk in general, but you get the sense that he's telling Cain, instead of being frustrated and angry that I did not fully accept your carbon that you offered me, do some introspection and realize that the chesaron perhaps is with you, and that you have to struggle constantly with your yetzer hara, and in the struggle you can prevail. But it's a lecha teshuka selva totim sholva. Now, so far, there's a dialogue between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Kai. Hevel does not appear into the picture at all. And if the pasuk would have ended here, no one would have known the difference. The confrontation between Kain and Hevel is completely obliterated by the Torah. Hashem does not want us to hear that confrontation. But there obviously was some sort of a confrontation. You don't simply one day turn around, pick up a knife, and stab somebody in the back. It doesn't work like that. Vayomer Kain el Hevel Ochiv. So the Torah implies the text of the conversation by saying that Kain spoke to Hevel Ochiv. But it does not tell us what the conversation was. The pasuk is truncated. Vayomer Kain el Hevel Ochiv. What? The very next words within the same pasuk, called Psuka Deloy Paske Moisha Anan Loy Paskinon, we are required to see this as one pasuk. Vayomer Kain el Hevel Ochiv, Vayehi Biyosom Basodeh, Vayokom Kain el Hevel Ochiv Vayahageh. Never was there a pasuk that was such a non sequitur, because there's a chelik of the pasuk, not maybe a chelik of a pasuk, maybe 10 psukim, maybe 20 psukim, that are missing. What was the conversation between Kain and Hevel? So the Torah refuses to tell us. You understand? The Torah is deliberately obscuring the conversation while at the same time indicating to us that there was a conversation. Because you could perhaps think maybe his frustration with HaKadosh Baruch Hu led to the aggression against Hevel because of that discrepancy. So Memeli killed him outright. No, there was a conversation. What does Rashi say? Nichnas imoy bedivrei riv umatzal his oilil olav lahargo. So the way Rashi interprets Kipshuto, he says that Vayomer Kain means that he started up with Hevel. In other words, he was looking to get Hevel into a predicament through his words to find some excuse to kill him. So how do you find an excuse in words? He started up with him. He wanted to get into a fight with him. V'yesh bazeh medrashi agoda, achzeh yishuvo shel nikra. It's very rare that Rashi does that. You know that the Rashbam and Rashi, the difference between their pirushim and the purportedly what Rashi said, that if he would have a chance to write the Pirush again, he would have followed the approach similar to the Rashbam. But the fact of the matter is that Rashi's presentation is medrashim after medrashim. And here, not only does he not offer the medrashim, he's as silent about the medrashim as the pasuk is silent about the dialogue, but also he seems to indicate, what I told you is what you need to know over here. That he got him into a discussion, into an argument, into a fight of words, lis olil olav laharga. And that's it. So the Torah, and even Rashi, doesn't want you to get involved in the text, in the text that's missing. Doesn't want you to get involved in the text that's missing. Vayomer Kain el Hevel Ochiv, vayhi biyosom basodeh. The next thing you know, after he kills him, Vayomer Hashem el Kain ei Hevel Ochiv. Hashem Ochiv Anochi. When you come to Mechiras Yosef, the Torah almost does the opposite. There's a very elaborate presentation of the quote-unquote killing of Yosef. Except that in the end they don't kill Yosef, and so on and so forth. And there's a tendency, you see, with Cain and Hevel there's almost nothing you can do. The Torah has so obscured their argument that you say to yourself, well, if there's a Medrash, whatever they say, the Medrash says, so I'm a Kabbal what the Medrash says. on my own, can I figure out what Cain said to Hevel and what Hevel responded to Cain? Or if he ever responded at all? I don't know anything. Because the Torah does not even give you the havamina. It doesn't give you the opportunity to say anything. Comes along Mechiras Yosef, and there's one psychological analysis after another. It's kemat not shaykh for anyone to look at this parsha and not come up with his own pshat. What was wrong? How can Shiftei Kah have this tremendous jealousy that the Torah is describing? And how could they want to kill Yosef? And on and on and on. So before we even go into the parsha itself, I wanted to look at this Rambam with you. Because the Rambam needs to be dealt with exactly the same way that we would learn a Rambam in Hilchos Tayin V'Nitin Perek Yud Beis. You cannot look at this Rambam and say, oh, this Rambam is like a Drush Rambam. You know, it's the end of Sefer Avodah. It's the end of Hilchos Me'ila. It's the last thing. The Rambam always finishes with a flourish of Hashkafa, his Sfarim. And Memela, whatever he says, we have to get to the gist of it and to the point of it. It's not so. You have to look at the Rambam exactly as you would look at any other Rambam in Halacha. Because it is a Rambam in Halacha. The Rav used to say over and over again, in the name of his father, perhaps also in the name of Reb Chaim and the Beis Halevi, I don't know how far back it went, that Agadata is halacha. It's the halacha of how a Jew is supposed to think. There's a certain sense of the world, sense of life, sense of orientation towards things. It's a gisha thing. What's my gisha? What's my approach? And that's what Haggadah does. It creates the backdrop, which gives you the filtered lens that you need to look at the world. There's a certain lens that you look at the world with called Torah. And that is given to you through Hashkafa as much as through Halacha. So Hashkafa, he said, is the Halacha of how a Jew is supposed to think. So in the end of Hilchos Me'ila, the Rambam says the following. Lest the person think that the Torah is beyond our reach, and therefore it would be absurd bechlal for us to try to relate ourselves to the Torah altogether and to look into the Torah to seek meaning and interpretation. He says, no, that's not true. Ro'i lo adam, it's perek ches, halacha ches, but it's very simple to know. It's the last halacha of Hilchos Me'ila, which is coincidentally, as I told you, the last halacha of Sefer Avodah of the Yud Dalet Svar. So it's very easy to find. So the Rambam says, Ro'i lo adam lizbonin b'mishpatei HaTorah HaKedosha. You know, HaTorah HaKedosha, you know, he's not being frum here. Because he wants, no, he wants you to hear the word Kedosha for a reason. Because he's comparing it to the story of Me'ila, where you take something chulin, and by words you turn it into Kodesh. So he says, HaTorah HaKedosha. It's deliberate, HaTorah HaKedosha. Ro'i lo adam lizbonin b'mishpatei HaTorah HaKedosha, v'leida sof inyonam kefi kocho. Now the very first thing that we have to ask here is, what does that mean? I am, you should forgive the colloquial, I am your average nincompoop Jew. I'm a regular schlepper. I'm not the Vilna Gaon, and I'm not the Ksav Sofer. I'm just an average fellow. I went to day school, I went to high school, I learned a little bit here, a little bit there, I learned a little bit in Eretz Yisrael, and now I have a tremendous avas haTorah, and I want to learn Torah, and I open up Mishpatei haTorah, and do I really have the right to say anything bechlal on my own? And not only that, it says here what seems to be a contradiction in terms. V'leida sof inyonam. What does sof inyonam mean? The ultimate depth, the ultimate plumbing of the depths of that halacha, of that mitzvah. Because he's speaking about Mishpatei haTorah here. He's not talking about Mechiras Yosef. He's talking about Mishpatei haTorah. You have to understand what is the why and the wherefore. It's almost like he's saying every person has to write his Mora Nevuchim, his own Mora Nevuchim. He has to explain Mishpatei haTorah. Soif inyonam shel mishpatei haTorah is extremely deep, kefi koichai, according to his capacity. So does he say whom he's addressing this to? Now imagine, just by contrast, to give you the sense of the paradox here. The Rambam speaks at the end of Hilchos Lulav. He speaks about Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And as you all know, the Rambam says, who would dance and who would play the musical instruments and who would juggle the torches? The tzaddikim, the chachomim, the anshei maisa. What did everybody else do? Everybody else is boyim lirois v'lishmoyim. They come to watch. So it comes out that to dance and to juggle, you need a godol hador. You need a tzaddik yisoid olam. You need the chacham of Sanhedrin. And to plumb the depths of mishpatei haTorah, everybody has a shaychus to it. It's the chlepel otzum. And when the Rambam says roi lo adam, he doesn't say which adam. So apparently it applies to every adam. So what I think the Rambam is telling me, which is astonishing, I mean, it's so astonishing, it boggles the mind. It just boggles the mind. Is that when the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a Torah, and he gave us a V'sein Chalkeinu B'sorah Secha, there is this intimate bonding that every Jewish neshama has with the Torah, that every Jew has the responsibility, and in a certain sense, his innate ability, which is very different from everyone else's innate ability, to relate to the Torah as best as he can, which means with his Yigiyah, with his Masaira, with his Kabbalah Sa'emes, with his Drisha Sa'emes, and whatever he comes up with is his chalik in that Torah. And it's appropriate for a person to do that, because each person in his bonding with the Torah is not bonding with the outer mantle of the Torah, he's not dancing with the Torah on Simchas Torah, he is relating to the Torah that's in the words of the Torah, in the Mishpatei haTorah. It's the Torah thoughts, the Torah ideas that he bonds with, not with the external chepsa of the Torah. So memela, roi lo adam lizboini. Now, because the Rambam is so committed to the idea that every person has his chelik in the Torah and he has an obligation, he doesn't say chayav, it's very interesting, but he says roi. There's a difference between roi and chayav. But once he says it's appropriate, you know, like we would use the word, it's not appropriate. You're not appropriate means a lot of things, but you shouldn't do it. Roi means the exact opposite. It's appropriate. You should do it. But you're not mechuyev to do it, but you should do it. Because each person should seek out to cement that bond that he has with the Torah, to find his chelik in the Torah. So roi lo adam lizboning. But because he said that, the Rambam now needs to provide the caveat, which is the sum total of this entire halacha. It's almost like the Rambam is saying, the reason I'm warning you about me'ila in Divrei Torah would not be necessary to give you that warning if the simplest way of keeping a person away from making any mistakes or getting into trouble in its interpretation of Torah is what? Don't you dare go into a place where you have no shaychus to, where you cannot connect. It's arba nichnasu lepardes, Rabbi Akiva nichnas b'sholem v'yotze b'sholem. I don't go into pardes. So if the Rambam is talking about pardes, for example, that pardes, so the Rambam doesn't have to give you all kinds of explanations of how you should be careful. Because the only reason a person has to be careful when he's crossing the street is because he's crossing the street. And then there are side streets and little streets and little alleys, and then there's big thoroughfares. And then you can cross the street where the cars are zooming and they don't even pay attention to you. So the warning has to be all the greater. But if you're not crossing the street, you don't have to give him any warnings. If a person's incarcerated in his house and never goes out, he doesn't have to get all kinds of drushes about how some streets are more chumra than others, because it's not relevant to him bechlal. It's the Rambam wants to spend the time giving you the warning about what not to do. But the only reason the Rambam wants to do that, or needs to do that, is because he starts out with a premise that the etzem, you're shayach to the parsha of crossing the street. And therefore, I have to teach you how to do it. I have to talk about red lights, and I have to talk about moving cars, and I have to talk about walking quickly, and looking around, and being circumspect, and so on and so forth. That's a very, very big chiddush. The first words of the Rambam is a tremendous chiddush. Roi la'odom lizbonein b'mishpete ha'torah ha'kedosha v'leida sof inyonam. We are lucky if most people know tchilas inyonam. Kefi kocho. The Rambam explains it has to be kefi kocho, which means that in a certain sense, just like there are in modern mathematics many infinities, in the Torah there are many infinities, and you could have your infinity, which is less than the other person's infinity. So sof inyonam kefi kocho. What would appear at first to be an insurmountable paradox is sof inyonam kefi kocho. It's not insurmountable paradox to the Rambam. For him, it's sof inyonam, and it's a valid sof inyonam, which is an amazing thing, because each person has his connection, and his connection does not have anything to do with the other person's connection. So for me, that is sof inyonam kefi kolchi. Now the Rambam says, therefore, v'davar shelo yimtza lo tam, v'lo yeda lo ila. What happens if he comes up with a question mark? I don't understand. So there's a tendency on part of every human being to fill in the blanks, to not allow the page to be tabula rasa. You know, you cannot allow the page to remain blank. You have to fill in the blanks. You have to color in the page. And that is a sakona gedola, says the Rambam, as I am suggesting the interpretation, sof inyonam kefi kolchi, that the Rambam has three warnings here, one completely different from the other. And if we don't read it as three warnings, I think we are missing very, very much the import of the Rambam's caveats. I mean, you could say the Rambam is saying, you know, if you don't know, don't mess up. Don't make any mistakes. But it's the precision of the Rambam's delineation of three categories of mistake. So he says as follows. Dovar shelo yimtza lo tam v'lo yeda lo ila. Ila means purpose. Al yihi kal be'enov v'lo yaharos la'alos el Hashem pen yifrotz bo v'lo tehe machshavto bo kemachshavto b'shar divrei hachol. Now, when I first learned this Rambam many, many years ago, I sort of hit a wall. I had a question. The Rambam says, "Al yihi kal be'enov, v'al yeros el Hashem liros pen yifrotz bo." And I said to myself, "Wait a minute. That was the wall. I'm describing now the wall that I hit. Those two phrases don't mesh. Al yihi kal be'enov, v'al yeros el Hashem liros. Why?" Because the way the Rambam uses the phrase Al Yeros Hashem Liros Pen Yifrotz Bo is a code for a pasuk in the Torah. This isn't the Rambam's language, nor do I believe it's the Rambam's using of Melitza. I believe the Rambam was zeroing in on the moment of Matan Torah when Hashem warns Bnei Yisrael through Moshe Rabbeinu that they should not attempt to climb the mountain and follow Moshe Rabbeinu up the mountain when he goes to receive the Torah. And the pasuk says exactly these words. V'akonim ha'om al yereso Hashem liros pen yifrotz bo. So I asked myself, if that's the case, the mountain is very holy, and they can't handle that holiness, and they're going to try to touch the holy. It's like a child touching the hot stove. He can get severely burnt. And that's Pen Yifrotz Bo. So I said to him, what's Al Yihi Kal Be'enov? Al Yihi Kal Be'enov is the opposite. That it's nothing. It's, you take it lightly. They didn't take the mountain lightly. They took the mountain seriously, and they assumed that their need to connect to Kedusha gives them the privilege to connect to Kedusha. And that was their mistake. And that might be, according to some interpretations, the issue of Nadav Avihu later on. And in the end, it led to the creation of the Chayta Egel. Because this tremendous she'ifa for the Kedusha can be something that you cannot handle. It's too much. So what is Al Yehi Kal Ve'Einav? So hitting that wall, I realized that the Rambam has two separate statements here, and it's fascinating to me that the Rambam says Al Yehi Kal Ve'Einav, then he says Al Yaros El Hashem Pen Yifrotz, and then he says the next thing after that, V'lo tehei machshavto bo kemachshavto b'shar divrei hachol. So wait a minute. You're going from Al Yikal Be'enov, and then you end up with machshavto k'divrei hachol, and in the middle is Pen Yifrotz Bo. So what is going on here? So I realize that the Rambam has a very precise delineation of three problems when you do not seem to find your way in the comprehension of your chelik in the Torah. And each one of these is a very distinct and separate problem. The first problem is saying, why am I bothering with this anyhow? It just doesn't make any sense. So, scribal error, I don't know, you could say whatever you want. But it's a rejection of the problem. It's just not worth my while bothering with it. Now, what's the third one? We'll skip the second one for a second. What's the third one? The third one says, I can bother with it for days, weeks, and months. I'm going to write a whole book about this. But I'm going to write it because I now understand that my limitation is because I was looking at it from a Torah perspective. But what I should really do is step back and become the social scientist, become the historian, become the scientist, whatever it is, whichever chelik of the Torah is I'm interested in. So when you say that chazer is because of trichinosis, it's not necessarily kal be'enov, because if trichinosis is a problem and you could die from trichinosis, then the Torah is giving you a very good warning which nobody at the time knew about. So the Torah is being mechadish to you, an Isser of chazir, which saved a lot of Jewish lives over the centuries. Whereas the guy who eats the chazir and doesn't realize it could die from the trichinosis. That's not kal be'enov. Kal be'enov means, whatever, I have to make myself crazy, I have better things to do, I can go to the movies. That's kal be'enov. Machshavto bo kemachshavto b'divrei hachol could end up being all kinds of apikursis. But it comes from an approach that says, I have this document, and I have these mitzvahs, and I have these chukim. I'm going to analyze what the society around them did. I'm going to look into the Akkadian texts. I'm going to ask, and so on and so forth. And of course, some of that could be valid and could be useful, and some of that could be treif like chazer, and give you more than trichinosis. But the kal be'enov is not that. In fact, when you look at the Rambam, machshavto bo kemachshavto b'divrei hachol, and the previous al yeres al Hashem pen yifrotz bo, you realize that what the Rambam did here is he took the two warnings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Har Sinai. And kal be'enov is that you don't even realize that you're at Har Sinai. That's kal be'enov. What are the two warnings? And he took those two warnings, which at the time was legabe the Mikdash issue of Har Sinai, as the Ramban says, Har Sinai is the first Beis HaMikdash, the first Hashruas HaShchina B'Soch Yisrael. And he uses that not only as a metaphor, I think he's being almost literal, but taking the Har Sinai moment and applying it to the Cheftza of Torah itself. This is what happened. They came to the mountain, and at the time, B'chodesh HaShlishi, that when they came to the mountain was like any other mountain, rather insignificant at that. And it was lush and full of greenery, and they had animals, and of course the instinct, the simplest thing to do is to graze on the slopes of the mountain. And that's what they were doing. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to tell Moshe Rabbeinu to warn them that what they did today and yesterday, they will not be able to do tomorrow. Why? Ki bayoyim hashlishi yered Hashem al Har Sinai. because now the mountain is being transformed into a mikdash, temporarily. In fact, the pasuk says, "Bimshoch hayovel," when you hear the all clear signal after Matan Torah is over, "Heimoyalu bahar," then they can graze their animals. Why? Because the mikdash rishon that the Ramban describes had a very short lifespan, and after that it is kuloi choil. Nobody's interested in where Hasinai is. It's not Negeya. It is now the same mountain like any other mountain, and especially insignificant. It had its moment of glory, its moment of fame. And at that moment when Hashem's Kedusha and Shechina rested upon the mountain, of course it would be absurd for them to treat the mountain as they did the day before. But there will be a moment after Matan Torah, and I will give you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the all-clear signal, when you will be able to go back to your routine of yesterday. But now you should know you are not allowed to graze your animals. That was warning number one. Warning number two, the mountain is Kodesh. And they understand that the mountain is Kodesh. Precisely because the mountain is Kodesh, and precisely because the Shekhinah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give a second warning, the warning of Bishas Maisa Ke'ilu, that now you are going to want to go up on the mountain, not Chas V'Shalom with your animals, Man Dechar Shmei animals, but you, and particularly the Kohanim who feel prepared to do so, and feel uniquely capable, they should know that they cannot reach out for the Kedusha that's there, even though this is incredible she'ifa, incredible yearning that the Neshama wants to bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ke'ilu it came from Kisei HaKavod and now it's now back. And it wants very badly to connect to Hashem, and they will run up the mountain to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha and Shechina. This is the opposite, literally the opposite. Before, they have to know that it's no longer chol, at least for a while. And now they have to know that because it's too kodesh for them, they cannot go up the mountain. That's why if you look at the psukim, you'll notice that the first warning and the second warning are not repetitions of one another, bichlal, but rather lehefech, the details of the first warning are warnings not to go on a mountain which you might think is still chol. And the details of the second warning are warnings of a mountain that you understand to be Kodesh, but you don't realize how unworthy you are to reach out to that Kedusha. And that's what it says here. V'gbalta es ha'am saviv leimar, hishamru lachem, this is the first warning, hishamru lachem alos bahar unagoa bekotzeyu, kol hanogeya bahar mos yumos. Lo siga bo yod, hisakol yisakel o yoro yiyore, im behema im ish lo yichye. What's the behemoth? The behemoth is seeking out Kedusha. The Teretz says they're grazing the animals like yesterday. He says, no, you can't, because now it's a mikdash. Lo yichye, bimshoch hayovel, and now, since the concept is to graze the animals, HaKadosh Baruch Hu explains to them that they will be able yet to graze their animals after Matan Torah is over, because it does not remain a mikdash for 1 second once Matan Torah is complete. So bimshoch hayovel, heimo ya'alu bahar. Says Rashi, kisheyimshoch hayovel kol aruch, the all clear signal. Hu simon siluk shechina v'hafsokas hakol v'kevon shenistalek heim rashoyim la'alois. Why do they want to go up on the mountain if the Shekhinah's gone? The Torah says they don't want the Shekhinah. They want to graze their animals, and Hashem says there will be yet a time that you can do that, but you have to wait for the all clear signal. Vayed Moshe l'om, vaykadosh esom, vaychab susim losom, vayomer l'om hayu nechon l'shloshes yomim, vayhi bayom ha'shalishi. Now it's the third day. Before, it was yet to be. Now it's the third day. V'yos ha'bok v'hi kolos v'rokim v'onon kovid al ahar. There's already an onon kovid on the mountain. V'kol shofor chazot meod v'yecher ad kolo om asher b'machaneh. No one is thinking of grazing any animals now. It's not shayach, and it's not nageya, and they were forewarned, and the parsha now takes a different turn entirely. Vayotzei Moshe sa'om likras elokim. They're so terrified that Moshe Rabbeinu has to stand behind and push them towards the mountain. Yisyatzu b'sachtisahar v'har Sinai oshan kolo mipnei asher yorad olof Hashem ba'esh. Hashem has already descended. No one is going to graze their animals now. Crystal clear that Hashem is already on Har Sinai. This is warning number two. You see the tremendous difference, not only in the change of venue, the mountain has now become the Mikdash, without a doubt. And Hashem's Shechina is resting upon it, but also you see a change in the language of the warning, which is critical. Moshe Rabbeinu says, the first warning already tells them not to touch the mountain. So they know already not to go upon the mountain. And it's fascinating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not spell out the next comment to Moshe Rabbeinu. What exactly is wrong with Moshe Rabbeinu's reasoning, Ki'ilu? But he says, "Vayomer Elav Hashem lech reid, v'alisa tov aroyim of hakoyim v'om al yersul la'alos l'Hashem pen yifrutz bam." He repeats it again. He doesn't explain to Moshe Rabbeinu why you need to warn them again, but the explanation is built into "Vakoyim v'om al yersul Hashem lech reid pen yifrutz bam." So what's the pshat? The pshat is pashat. It's exactly as I told you. Lifnei amaisa the choyel is going to change into Kodesh. They have to be warned that that's going to happen. So the emphasis doesn't mention Kohanim at all. Kohanim don't have animals and they don't graze animals. So what do they have to know? They're not interested in the mountain of Chol. So you have to mention Kohanim should be warned that now the mountain is becoming Kodesh. They weren't there to begin with. Furthermore, behemoths are mentioned because the behemoths graze. Here the behemoths are not mentioned. Why suddenly that shift? And why the Lashon, Yersu Liros? There's no Yersu Liros in the beginning warning, because there's nothing to see. Lehefer. The warning at the beginning is not to treat it like Chol because it's becoming Kodesh. The warning at the end is, since it's Kodesh, you should not try to reach out to the Kodesh. It's crystal clear to me that that is exactly what it is. What's it, Nogeya? That when the Rambam uses a Lashon, that is Mila B'Mila, Mamish Mila B'Mila, the Lashon of the Pasuk, it's not a Melitza Ba'alma. He's saying, if when Hashem descended upon Har Sinai, and Shechina was Shoyre on the mountain, there was a Sakana that people who are not Roi L'Kach reach out to the mountain, and Hashem warns them that you'll be incinerated, then it's equally true that the Chefza of Torah, which represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, and which is given to us, is just as much that Kodesh, that if a person thinks he's Roi L'Kach, and he climbs up that mountain called the Torah, and attempts to interpret things that are not Shaykh to him, that he will be violating that same thing, and in a certain sense will also be incinerated. Except that that incineration is incinerating the Torah at the same time. So what's the pshat? The pshat is, you know, have all these people into Kabbalah. They're into Kabbalah. So they say, this is this, and this is that, and they're talking about Abba Ima, and Zer Anpin, and Atika Kadisha, like there's no tomorrow. Mamish, like there's no tomorrow. There's no shaykhus to it whatsoever. And I'm not talking about you know who. I'm talking about El Chayitin. This idea that the Rambam started out with, Roy Lo Adam Lizbainin B'mishpida Torah, Soifin Yonam Kefi Koichai. A person has to know, says the Rambam, that Kefi Koichai creates extraordinary limits in what your capacity for Soifin Yonam is. So you're going to hit a logjam, you're going to hit a wall, and you're going to say, I'm going through the wall, over the wall, or under the wall. That's really what the three approaches are. Through the wall, there's no wall. It's time, you know, I hit a wall, I understand that. This is not something to waste my time on. It's a story. What am I making myself crazy from a story? So in that, of course, is a massive amount of apikursis, and I don't see how you could come up to that maskana and then go to the next. You're basically finished with the Torah. But that's Al Yehi Kal Beinov. So Al Yehi Kal Beinov is reserved for people who are fundamental apikorsim to begin with. But then there's the person who's the exact opposite. He says, this is so holy. This is so complicated. This is so esoteric. But I know the pshat. And this represents this, and this represents that. That's Al Yersel Hashem Liras, Pen Yifutzbah. To go over the hill, over the wall, is also very often an account of a person's inability and ignorance. And that is a tremendous travesty to the Torah. And that's a form of me'ilah. And then, of course, going under the wall, what I mean is, you say, yes, it's difficult to understand, but I will explain it to you by using all these tools that are at my disposal, the same way that I would analyze a work by Aristotle, or the same way I would analyze the works of Homer. Machshavto bo k'machshavto b'divrei achol. I can graze my animals. There's a lush mountain over here, and I can graze my animals. That's machshavto bo k'divrei achol. And you see that the Rambam repeats all three, because a little bit later he says as follows. He says, Borei, after he gives us these three yesodos of what you shouldn't do if you hit a wall in your comprehension of mitzvos and chukim, Borei kama hechmira Torah b'mi'ilah. Umaim eitzim va'avonim va'ofa ve'efer. Kivon shenikra shem adon ha'olam aleihem bedvarim bilvad. All he did was say, hareze korban. Hareze hektesh. Right? Niskachu v'chol ha'noeg bohem minik chol mo'al bo. V'afilu ha'yoshogeg tzarech kapara. The Rambam is paralleling the Me'ila concept, afilu hayoshogeg, tzarech kapara, kal v'choymer l'mitzvah shechokak lonu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now listen. Now, if I'm right, the Rambam should have three phrases what he shouldn't do. Whereas if I'm wrong, then the Rambam should simply say he shouldn't dismiss it, or whatever he might want to say. Listen to the Rambam. Kal v'choymer l'mitzvah shechokak lonu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shelo yivayit ha'odom bohem mipnei shelo yeda taman. That's the kick, like the Gemara in Avodah Zorah says that the goy will kick the sukkah on his way out. V'lo yechapet vorim asher lo kein al Hashem. What's that? That's in the going to the Olam Asal Yoinim and imagining all kinds of things ke'ilu l'gabe HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are lo kein. V'lo yachshov bohem machshavto k'divrei achol. Mamish repeated three phrases one after the other. You see clearly that the Rambam was not this, you know, making things more clear or more emotional by just repeating himself, by adding words. The Rambam has three completely separate gishot, each one of which is a churban of the Torah. And then he says, Harei nema batoira v'shmartem eskol chukosa v'eskol mishpota v'asisem osam. What does the word u'shmartem mean to all of us? What does it mean? When I say u'shmartem es mitzvah osai, what does it mean? To perform the mitzvahs, to keep the mitzvahs. The Rambam learns that it means to protect the mitzvahs. U'shmartem. Like a shomer. Shomer chinam, shomer socha. U'shmartem es ha-mitzvahs. Omru chachomim. Litein shmira ve'asiya lechukim kimishpatim. That there has to be shmira and asiya for chukim, just like there's shmira ve'asiya to mishpatim. So what is shmira and what's asiya? We always assume that it's the same thing. For ha'asiya yidua v'hi sheyasa chukim. Knows that he should actually perform the mitzvah. So what's shmira? Hashmira sheyizoher bohen. He shouldn't think that they are less than mishpatim. That's what you need the shmira for. To take the chukim seriously as what is logical to you. Domim. V'chukim heina mitzvos she'ein tam on yodua. In other words, chukim are things that we would not imagine that somebody would come up out of his own mind in some form or other. Understand very well that the rules of Kibbud Av Va'Em, we wouldn't come up with all the halakhos of Kibbud Av Va'Em on our own. But the concept of Kibbud Av, I imagine we could understand. We would not come up with all the rules of Tznius, we would not come up with all the rules of Ritzicha. Because how do you know an embryo is or is not? How are you ever going to know? So you have the rules of Ritzicha are given by the Torah just the same as any other rules. And we would not know the details of those rules. So the Rambam doesn't mean that we would know all of the details as the Torah presents them. You need a Torah for every one of the Mishpatim, because the Mishpatim... How do you know that a Shomer is Potter if Ba'al of Imai is just as esoteric, is just as beyond us in its logic, or our perceived lack of logic in it, even though in the general category, these are not chukim, these are mishpatim. Shomer is a shayel, shomer chinam, shomer socher. It all makes sense. A person should have more chiyuvim as a shomer based on more compensation or more advantage, and less chiyuvim if he's doing you a favor. So shomer chinam, shomer socher, and Shoyal make perfect sense. But Bolavima upsets the whole apple cart to say, oh, I understand all of this on my own. I don't even need a Torah for this. This is what I would have written myself. Because no one would have introduced on earth, no one would have introduced the concept of Bolavima. And there are many other such chukim within the Mishpatim, Ke'ilu. But the Rambam means the general rubric, the general orientation towards these things, Ritzicha, Gezel. There are lots of nuances in Gezel. Kefel, meichateisa kefel, meichateisa karel chaimish v'asham, asham gzeilos, and so on and so forth. So the Rambam doesn't mean that mishpatim from beginning to end are so obvious and self-evident that we don't need shmira. We need shmira for the mishpatim in many ways more than the chukim, if you understand my meaning. It doesn't in any way change what the Rambam is saying. What I mean to say is that in Mishpatim we have to be constantly vigilant to appreciate that the Torah's way of dealing with Mishpatim is not necessarily the way any society is dealing with Mishpatim would come up with in its detail. But the principle, the reason they're called Mishpatim, is because the general rubric, the general category, is a logical, reasonable category in the human perception. Chukim, Meichateis altogether. So when we speak about chukim, so we have to know chukim a mitzvah she'ein tam on yodua. He doesn't say she'ein bohem tam. The Rambam doesn't say that chukim are things that we are blindly obligated to do, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu set for us just to prove that we are avodim to him. He says ein tam on yodua. Because if he would say that they don't have a tam, then what's royal adam lizbainin b'chukim? It doesn't make any sense. How can you look into something when it doesn't exist? You can ask a person, you show them a picture that's black and white, and you ask them, what do you say about all those colors? There are no colors. The Teretz says, chukim have a tam, but ain tam on yodua. So our struggle is to find the tam, but our struggle to find the tam does not in any way implicate the chayk. It implicates us. We don't understand. So we stop. We cannot go through the wall, we cannot go above the wall, and we cannot go under the wall. We have to stop. That's it, ad kan, besulo midi. And that's what he says. Otherwise, it's a form of me'ila, a gross form of me'ila, mikal v'chomer. The Toiva, the Hamishpotim, hei mitzvah, shetam, and gold, the Toiva says, Yosem, chukim, hei mitzvah, she'ein tam, and yodua. Omru chachomim chukim chaktiloch vein lecho rishus laharer bohem. V'yitzro shal odom nokfo bohem v'umos ha'olam meshivim aleihem kagon isur psa chazir u'basa b'cholo v'egla rufo paraduma soya mishtaleach v'kamo yodovid ha'melech mitztayr min aminim u'mino akum. Min aminim means even Jewish minim. U'mino akum shahoyu meshivim ala chukim. Because man show you wrote fin also betruvis hasheker she'orchin lefikotzer das ha'odom ha'yamosif deveikus batorah. It's very interesting. He's saying that what was David HaMelech's response or reaction to the people who were rodef him, and he is introducing now a new kind of redifa. The redifa of zeidim helitzuni ad miod mitayras choloi natisi. And many mefarshim say that when it says in Ala Nisim, the Zaydim biyad osake Torah sechov, we were just about to Hanukkah. What's the Zaydim biyad osake Torah sechov? Rabbim biyad miyatim. Who are the rabbim? The Yavonim, right? Rishoyim biyad tzadikim. Not so clear. Zaydim biyad osake Torah sechov. Who are the Zaydim? So the Zaydim may very well have been the Misyavnim. And the way that the Rambam here portrays David HaMelech's response, he's talking about the such Misyavnim. What are you talking about? What is this Torah of yours? That's Al Yikal Beinov. And then there's the esoterics who say, oh, it's not the way you think. The Torah is this and the Torah is that. It's nothing to do with Chukim. You're not supposed to do any of these things. It's a symbol, it's a concept, it's an idea. And Machshavta Kedivrei Chol, let's analyze it scientifically. All of these three approaches, he says, the Zaydim Halitzuni Admiot, Toflu Alai Sheker Zaydim. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? I'm giving you this mitzvah, and I'm giving you this mitzvah. What are these people saying? It's all nonsense. It's nothing. So what is David HaMelech's reaction? More Torah, deeper Torah, stronger commitment to Torah, a bigger dveikus in Torah. Ani b'chol lev, with my entire heart, I bind myself to the Torah. B'chol lev etzor pikudecha. B'nema sham b'inyon kol mitzvasecha muna sheker dafuni. Kol hakarbonos kulon mechlal achukim heim. Omu chachomim b'shvil avodas hakarbonos ha'olam omeid. The same chukim we learn from the Chachomim that Avodas HaKarbonos is Mekayim the world. So don't dismiss the Chukim, and don't reinterpret the Chukim, and don't undermine the Chukim. Shabasiyas HaChukim VeHamishpatim Zochim HaYishorim L'chaye HaOlam Haba VeHikdimo Torah Tzivui Al HaChukim before the Mishpatim Shenemar Ushmartem Es Chukosai Ves Mishpata Shayas Osam HaOdom V'chai Bohem. Slika luchos mila and nigmar sefer shmini hu sefer avod. So that's chelak aleph of what I wanted to tell you. Chelak beis. Do we have any time left?
Yes.
Yeah. Chelak beis. I want to go a little bit into the story of Mechiras Yosef. Yes.
When you said that Rambam says that there shouldn't be kedivrei chol, is that you shouldn't analyze it scientifically, were there actually people in the Rambam's day who were doing that kind of thing, looking at Akkadian texts?
No, they aren't looking at Akkadian texts, but they are definitely saying that Chazer is because of this or because of that.
And
some people might be inclined to say that the Rambam indulged in a certain... Obviously, I'm not one of those people. But there are people who treat the Rambam also. You know, the Rambam, when it came to Lechem Aponim, he said, I don't know what this is all about. In the Mor Nevuchim, he says, I don't know what this is all about. Tries to explain all of the Avodas HaKarbonos and all the Avodas in the Beis HaMikdash. And when it comes to Lechem Aponim, he says, I don't know what it's all about. And remarkably, in the Zmiras that we say on Shabbos from the Ari HaKadosh, we say, Yigal Elon Tamei D'Treser Nahamei. Kadosh Baruch Hu should reveal to us the reason for the 12 loaves of bread. So he also didn't know. There's a certain orientation that was existent long before the time of the Rambam that tried to explain things in very human terms. So let me get to Mechiras Yosef and I'll show you what I mean. Jealousy is an incredible midah, meguna, but it's also maybe the most powerful of all the midos, kina. And the remarkable thing about kina is that it can affect and infect people who have tremendous kochos. Some people suggest that in the mice of Cain the Hevel, if Hevel would not have had Hatzlocha, Cain's lack of Hatzlocha would not have led to anything at all. Might not have been Choraloch and Naflu Panecha. You win some and you lose some. I'll try better next time. I'll bring better Peres, better Karbonos. What is the reason for Choraloch and Naflu Panecha? Ayisha Hashem el Hevel v'al Milchasa. then Vel Kayin Vel Minchasa Loishah takes on, in the eyes of Kayin, an entirely different perspective. Now, you come to Mechiras Yosef, and everybody talks about the Kinas HaAchim. Chazal themselves say, La'olam al Yeshana Bein HaAchim, you're not supposed to show preferential treatment, because for a few dollars worth of fancy material, you have the whole Maisa of Golus Mitzrayim. Had Yaakov Avinu not given the Ksoinus Pasim to Yosef, then the Gemara is implying the entire Mechiras Yosef would not have occurred. Now, having said that, it would seem that the Gemara is telling us that when you look at the Maisa of Mechiras Yosef, and when you learn Parshas Vayeshev, you are entitled to say that this is a story of jealousy. And jealousy is something that's very human, and we are all able to relate to it. There are brothers that in the end have all kinds of animosities to one another, in families where the parents constantly stressed the importance and their love for that important son or daughter at the expense of at least not stressing their love, or even of showing a certain negativism to some of the other children. And that's exactly what the Gemara is warning against. They're giving a hadracha to parents when they raise their children. So if we would stop right there, we would say that we are perfectly entitled to look at the story of Mechiras Yosef as one of fundamentally great and wonderful people, but at the same time, plagued with that unbelievable midah of kinah, which is something that every person has to warn against. And we might even invoke, almost as a frumkeit, kol agadol mechaveiro yitzro gadol heimenu, and say that their measure of jealousy led even to such an incredible extreme of having hava minas of killing him, killing Yosef. So would that be a reasonable approach? Or would that perhaps fall under one of the three categories, either the first or the third, obviously not the second? The second would be that it's not Yosef, it's Midas Yesod. But and you know, you could read a Zohar that might say something along those lines. But we're not writing the Zohar. You understand? That's the difference. That's Al Yechabe. Person can't write his own Zohar, you know, because he has a few words and phrases here and there. But we'll leave that alone, because we are assuming that we are now looking at it based on that Gemara as simple, plain vanilla jealousy, granted on the part of very great people, but people who are capable of fallibility, of capable of making mistakes, capable of misjudging, and certainly capable of jealousy. And lehefech, maybe the jealousy is to a fault, to an extreme, because they are so great. Kol ha-godol mechaveiro yitzro godol heimenu. I believe that this approach, both to the Gemara as well as to the Psukim mikal v'chomer, is in fact a gross violation of that Rambam, and ends up putting us into a very, very dark box, which is completely closed and from which you cannot climb out of. It's a total distortion of what Torah is. Now, number one, the Torah is obviously l'chol hadeos, aiming towards Shmos, meaning we are headed to Mitzrayim, and this is crystal clear. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu told already Avram Avinu, Yado Ateida Kiger Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lohem. So to leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of this equation and to simply assume that there was this moment of jealousy that the Torah is describing is not only being blind to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's management of the world and the destiny of Shiftei Ka, it's blind to the narrative of the Torah itself. What I mean to say is this. You can't say that the Torah is saying this because I feel like interpreting it that way, and then ignore what the Torah is saying besides this, because that can't be. In other words, even if you want to look chalila v'chas at a document qua a human creation, you simply cannot ignore that the creation has a mahalach from beginning to end. No one has a right to take excise a chapter and say that I'm going to analyze this chapter, and then somebody asks, did you read the rest of the book? He says, why do I have to read the rest of the book? I read this chapter. But it's a narrative. It's a story. It has a beginning, it has an end. The author had a point. He was headed somewhere. So doesn't that mean that what he writes has relevance in the context of the entire story? So now we take a look at Mechiras Yosef, and we see that there is a beginning and an end to the story of Mechiras Yosef, which begins long before Parshas Vayeshev and ends substantially after Parshas Vayeshev. In fact, it ends at the end of Sefer Dvarim and even beyond. So where is our ability to analyze Parshas Vayeshev without putting it into that context which the Torah itself places? So just a moment. Now, does that deny the jealousy? Does that mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu took advantage of human emotions? So, now that we've complicated matters, let us take a look at what's happening over here. Yaakov Avinu has a definite preference for Yosef. And there's definitely Vayikanu Bo'echov. And there's definitely a Va'aviv Shomar Es Hadovar. Now, anyone who has a Hava Mina, that this is your plain vanilla jealousy of people who can't stand the fact that one of their brothers is treated in a special way, is missing the point even on the most superficial level. So if I become a psychoanalyst and I take my Jungian or Freudian or Rogerian or whatever Ian approach to this, that's machshavto bo kedivrei machshavto b'chol. For me to say that this is just another one of those stories of jealousy and why do I have to bother with this? It's like, you know, it's like there's jealousy in my house. What do I need this for? Is boit. For me to interpret that this is Yesod and Chesed and Gvura and Teferis and whatever is Pen Yifrotzbo. But what is it? So the answer is, what it is the extraordinary Hashgacha working its way through the Kochos of these Shiftei Ka to achieve the Yerido L'Mitzrayim. Now, here you have a very remarkable thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu manipulates the history, so we are puppets. If we are puppets, we are totally not responsible. So does it mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu plants the thought of Kina in my head? Let's ask the question about Yaakov Avinu. What was going on in his head, Ke'ilu, when he gave the Ksonas Pasim? So one thing is crystal clear. That anybody who interprets the Ksonas Pasim as kind of like, you know, I like you, so I'm giving you a necklace, has to have his head examined. It doesn't make any sense. You read the Torah like that, you're reading that, reading Jane Austen. I mean, a person has to have a sense that the Torah has substance to it. Never mind the Kedusha, never mind the Emunah that we have, but substance. What does it mean, Yaakov? The Torah describes a small snippet of anything that goes on in their lives. We know so little about Avraham Avinu. We know so little about Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not a biography. It's not into telling stories. So what are these stories? So Yaakov Avinu is doing something. And you know what he's doing? So you have to go to the Medrashim. You have to go to the Mefarshim. And you discover that what Yaakov Avinu is doing is defining Yosef. And what the brothers are doing is they are rejecting that definition. And when Yosef acts out that definition, they feel that there is a threat to the future of the Shiftei Ka and of the Klal Yisrael that's supposed to come out of it. And it turns out to be this incredible machlokas, if you will, which they then invoke HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the tenth to the Cherem, not to tell Yitzchak and not to tell Yaakov. We can't invoke HaKadosh Baruch Hu to participate in a Cherem when you're just the plain vanilla Goslin and Rotzeach. You can't. There's obviously, from the perspective of Chazal, an understanding that there are these extraordinary tectonic movements going on here in the relationship between Yaakov, Yosef, and the rest of them, which has to do with a certain orientation. What is that orientation? Three of us or four of us? What is the role of Yosef? Now Yaakov is the Av who gets them through Golos. What happens after Golos? What happens after this Golos? What happens after the ultimate Golos? So there's a redemption from Golos. How does that redemption happen? So then there is a whole parsha of Mashiach ben Yosef before Mashiach ben David and Yosef and Yehuda, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. But what's going on right now, at least, Yaakov sees Yosef as the next step. And in fact, there are all kinds of remozim and medroshim to indicate that Yosef is the next step. For example, Ephraim u'Menashe k'ruvein v'shimon yehu li. I'm giving you an extra portion, says Yaakov Avinu. Now imagine the following. There's this incredible jealousy. Yaakov Avinu suffers the most from that jealousy. He does not know that Yosef is alive. Yosef. And then when he discovers that he's alive, what happens? He does much worse than Ksainis Pasim. Because Ksainis Pasim, Ksainis Pasim, if Ksainis Pasim doesn't mean anything. But now, he's doing what? He is identifying Yosef as number one. Incredible. The Teretz is, there's a residual in Yosef that never was resolved in a certain sense of being more than the Shiftei Ka, but still remaining part of the Shiftei Ka. It's almost as if to say, who won Ki'ilu? It was a struggle. Who won? So the answer is the Shvatim won. But the Shvatim won, and yet Yosef is two Shvatim. Now why should Yosef be two Shvatim? Because he has son Ephraim and Menashe. Every one of them had children. Now you have Chushim ben Don. Everybody had a number of children. So why don't they also have that Zechus? So the answer is because they grew up in Mitzrayim. So what is that? Gives them some extra Zechus? Maybe yes. Maybe there's a concept that there has to be in the Shvatim an element that goes through a Golos without Yaakov, without the rest of the Shvatim, then Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva. How do you interpret something like that? He wants to rest. He's tired. He's an old man. He's tired. You know, it's time to retire. Kofetz Alav wrote Zosha Yosef. What? That's how you read a Pasuk? That's how you learn Torah? That's good for the Miami Herald. That's not Torah. It's not Torah on anyone's level. Never mind on the level that you're supposed to reach. So what is Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva? And then according to Chazal, the response, Loi Dailoch, that you have Olam Haba, you want Olam Hazeh also. What? So everyone asks, what's wrong with that? So Reb Yerucham and a number of others who have the Musadiga approach here, which in the Shivim Panim LaTorah, It's an approach, does not have any of the violations of those three categories, and it has a certain statement to make of Torah to teach others, which says that basically Olam Hazeh for tzaddikim is a facade. It's nisyonos. It's not the real thing. The real thing is Olam Haba. Other Bali Musa say that if you give up Olam Haba for Olam Hazeh, it's not a worthwhile trade-off, because the good of Olam Haba is infinitely greater, and the good of Olam Hazeh has its finiteness. So I'm giving up infinite for finite, which is a stupid thing to do. So better that Yaakov should be covered to love Rogzel Shal Yosef than Leishay B'Shalva. But on the surface, without going it from a Musadika direction, without making that Musar turn, what do we see in the puzzle? Yaakov thinks that his role is over. Basically, he's come back to Eretz Yisrael. Coming back to Eretz Yisrael is not merely coming home. Coming back to Eretz Yisrael means that his role as the Av of Golos has come to an end. And really, it has not come to an end, because the Av of Golos has one more episode of Golos, the most critical of all the episodes of Golos, and that's the Yerida L'Mitzrayim. Anoichi Eired Imcha Mitzrayim of Anoichi Alcha Gamalo. Yaakov Avinu feels that from the moment that he left, was chased by Esav, and now has gone through Lavan, and has been saved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now met Esav, and is reconciled with Esav, and goes Anochi Asnal Liiti, and now he has arrived by Yeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, the chelek that Yaakov receives from Yitzchak as part of the Birkas Avraham. He has come now full circle, and his experiences of Maisa Ova Simon Labonim, of being in Golos, have now come to an end. And that Yerida L'Mitzrayim that is about to occur requires a Mechiras Yosef and a whole episode of Yaakov's misery during that long tkufa where he didn't know that Yosef was alive, is a chelek of Rogzo Shel Yosef, which apparently is part and parcel of the Yerida L'Mitzrayim. There's a suffering that Yaakov personally has to go through. I don't know if this is in any particular sefer, and I'm saying this in the same way that the Rambam says kefi kocho. I would like to make a suggestion. In the missing part of the Golos, in the personal Yaakov Avinu experience, what is its parallel in the Maisa of a Siman Lepon? So I'll tell you. Yaakov Avinu says something very, very remarkable to Esav at the very beginning. We spoke about it last time. Im lovan garti. Chazal say, im lovan garti, tayag mitzvah shamarti, v'lo lamadati mimaisa v'roi. What seems to be going off on a tangent, you'll see I'll bring it back right away. There are arba banim in the Haggadah. Keneged arba banim dibra Torah. There's something remarkable if you look at all four banim side by side. V'haya ki yishalcha bincha, singular or plural? Bincha, singular, your son. V'igadeto libincha bayomahu leimar, singular or plural? Singular. What is the Sheino Yodea Lishol? V'igadeto libincha. What is the Chacham? Ki yishalcha bincha machaleimar. Who do we have left? The Rasha and the Tam. Right? What's the lashon of the Tam? Singular or plural? Let's take a look. The plot thickens. It's at the end of Parsha's bow. Yeah. What does it say? Haya ki yisholcha vincha mochaleima mazos. Tomahu omer? Mazos. Singular or plural? Ki yisholcha bincha mochaleima mazos. The very end of Parshas Bo. What's the pasuk of the Rasha? V'haya ki yomru aleichem b'neichem moha avodah zaslachem. Rosh Hashanah Omer moha avodah zaslachem. What does the pasuk say? Ki yomru aleichem yomru plural b'neichem plural. You ever wonder about that? The teretz is that there's going to come a time in Golos when the vast majority of Jews will fall into that category. And it will be in the plural. What is the connection between this and the parasha of Vayeshev? When Yaakov went through Golos number one, he does not lose anything. And he does not suffer the loss of children. Im lovon garti v'taryag mitzvah shamarti sounds very personal. I did this and I did that. You're talking about a whole world. You're talking about shiftei ka. You're talking about sons. Every one of whom could have gone off the derech and been inspired by Lavan's treachery and Lavan's greed and Lavan's avodah zarah and just in general the milieu and the environment. If he's so proud of himself, ki'ilu, that he's saying him love and gaiety, whatever, I don't mean proud in the sense of pride. I'm saying if he shows that accomplishment, Yaakov, so obviously he's saying that in a context of not I did this. We are all gaiety and we are all shamarti, and none of us lamdu mimaisa haroi. We're not finished with golus. There can't be such a golus, and then that should be maisa of a similar bonim. Because Golos has massive karbonos. And those are the karbonos that are represented by losing Yosef. And that's Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. It's part of Bikesh Yaakov. You have to go down to Mitzrayim, and in Mitzrayim, if you're losing Yosef, you're not losing Yosef. You are losing Halolo of the Avodah Zarah, Halolo of the Avodah Zarah. And this is going to be a golus that extends after the Churban by Yesheni for thousands of years. And in those thousands of years, there'll be a massive amount of Torah, and there'll be a massive amount of Yirah Shamayim, and there'll be a massive amount of commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in spite of everything. But there will also be massive losses. Massive losses. Of Yidden, who will no longer even know that they're Yidden. Of Yidden who will no longer accept the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of Yidden who don't know one iota of the Torah that we are learning with such vigor, with such enthusiasm. Not the Rambam Yud Beis of Tayyim V'Nitan and not the Pasuk in Chumash. And that's Ki Yomru Aleichem B'neichem. And that's Mechiras Yosef. And Mechiras Yosef and the Yerida to Mitzrayim is to create a matzav where you can no longer say im lovan garti v'tarik mitzvah shamarti. And that is the ultimate madrega of golos that we are going into in the Yerida l'Mitzrayim. And that's just the surface of the surface. Then, when it comes to the different brothers and the reaction of the brothers and the way that plays out, it's also a remarkable thing. There's Reuven and there's Yehuda, and they play their roles, and the interplay between them and their relation to Yaakov Avinu. There's so much incredible subtlety. But what's going on here is fraught with the most extraordinary level of machloikis. The machloikis is not kina. The machloikis. The kinna is, you are a brother, why are you more than a brother? That's the kinna. So let's go back to the Gemara for a minute. We could spend hours and hours and hours on this theme. But let's go back to the Gemara for a minute. What is the Gemara saying? The olam ayatel odom. So what the Gemara says is as follows. You could have a machlokes that is on the highest level possible. And you could be talking about Shiftei Ka and about Yaakov Avinu, the Avos. And clearly, we are not talking about your run-of-the-mill, you know, homespun narrative of people having, you know, conflicts in the home, which are based on the parents' preferential treatments. But the fact that the Torah presents this facade, ki'ilu, and organizes the reaction of the avos and the reaction of the bonim and the interplay of the achim in this way is to teach us a lesson that applies to every family, in spite of the fact that we can't replug that into the goings-on of the avos and the goings-on of the shiftei kah. To make the mistake of thinking that what's going on in the Torah is exactly this normal run-of-the-mill, plain vanilla jealousy, which is caused by a parent giving the child a little bit extra allowance than any of the others, or by telling them how wonderful they are, or how handsome they look, or how pretty their hair is totally absurd, and a tremendous bizayon ha-Torah. But the Torah could have spoken that these are the avos, and that these are, that's a machloikus about whether Yosef has a role as an av, or Yosef has a role as just one of the brothers like anybody else. And then it would have been crystal clear that it's a different issue entirely. So why does the Torah say Vayikanu bo Yaakov, and why does it say Vaslo Ksonas Pasim without explaining what the Ksonas Pasim is? Because the Torah wants to convey a simple moral lesson, b'vasachas, and that is that preferential treatment makes a korban of the household. That's why you have a remarkable thing. When Yosef sees Binyamin and the brothers, he gives them all chalifos smalos. And what does he do with Binyamin? He shows him preferential treatment. After all of that, you know what the teretz is? The teretz is that Yaakov Avinu had to show preferential treatment. Because the shitaso, that he's one of the next level, the next stage, whatever we call that, because it never happened. But what stage? And perhaps it happened with the mice of Potiphar, you know? That spouse of the Zera went out of his 10 at spouse. He lost 10 of the 12 of the shvatim that he could have created. There's all kinds of things going on that are based on the Midrashim, Amar Chazal, and Sifri Kabbalah. But whatever it is, when Yaakov Avinu gives him that son as pasim, we're not talking about an extra allowance. But in that narrative, you have the possibilities of seeing it that way. So when Yosef comes to his brother, there is Yosef and Binyamin, and there's a certain inyan of Binyamin. And Binyamin Bochal Tzavarov with the Maisa of the Beis HaMikdash. And all of these things that are going on, so the Vilna Gaon says that the value of what he gave Binyamin in its totality is equal to the value of what he gave to each one of the brothers. So monetarily there was no difference. Why show any difference at all? Because there is in that story infused a symbolism that needs to be expressed. And Yosef expresses that symbolism by giving him those extra chalifos smalos. There is a Rachel Mavaka Abaneha, and there's an inyan of children coming from Rachel versus the children coming from Leah. There's a Yosef, there's a Yehuda, there's a Binyamin, there's a Reuven, and each one has this cosmic role to play in the creation of Klal Yisrael. So how do you know if you're right or if you're wrong, or if your chelek in Torah is legitimate or not? So the answer number one is you have to have a Rebbe. Number two, you have to immerse yourself in Torah, and you have to accept as an a priori the ultimate Kedushas HaTorah that the Rambam is speaking about when he speaks about Mi'ilah. And that's why the Rambam started out HaTorah HaKedusha. Again, as I told you at the beginning, the Rambam is not now getting religious on you. What he's doing is he's saying you should know that my whole analysis that's going to be the last halacha, Berakhez halacha, Ches of Me'ilah, the last halacha of Sefer Avodah, is to explain that you have to look at the Torah differently. It's Torah Kedoshah. and therefore it's untouchable and inviolate. And therefore, whenever you try to do something, agam that you are responsible to do so. You can't come up with the pshat because you were driving and I just thought of an idea. You cannot come up with a pshat which no mukkar exists for. You cannot come up with a pshat because it sounds like a very good gematria. It fits this or it fits that. There's no such thing. And you certainly cannot come up with a pshat that interprets the Torah against itself or interprets the Torah in esoteric ways that you have no shaykhus to, which is very, very common lately. It's very, very common. The Vilna Gaon wrote many svarim as pirushim, like the pirush to the Safra D'Tzniusa and the pirush to the Tikkunei Zohar. So if a person can go through those pirushim and understand them, then I would say that he's entitled to give a pshat. You know, so you take one of those pirushim, you open it up, don't understand mamish 10 words in a row. You know what that shows? This is not your world. Leave it alone. Don't go near it. Leave it alone. Al yerso al Hashem. What's the pen yifrod's bow? Because there's an incredible corruption in distortion of Torah that it corrupts the person, his personality, and even his midos, believe it or not. You cannot have a Torah corrupted without the concomitant corruption of yourself, maybe your family, maybe the society around you, and if chas v'sholom you're a rav of some sort, then you can corrupt the whole world. And if you write a book, then altogether you can be a mesis, a mediach to the whole world. That's all in that Rambam. When a person looks at the Torah, he has to have a Rebbe, he has to follow Medrashim HaMari Chazal, has to be confident that he has the ability to interpret the Medrashim HaMari Chazal, and more important than everything else, is Shal No Lecho Me'al Raglecho Kamok Mashata Oymit Shom Admas Kodesh. That sense of fear and trepidation has to go with a person before he ever opens up his mouth. And most of the time, I mean, I listen to drasha sometimes at Simchas, and my Agmas Nefesh knows no limits. Not supposed to have Agmas Nefesh on Shabbos and Yom Tov. My Agmas Nefesh knows no limits, because the absurdity and the corruption and the brutality of that corruption, it's like gross, is so incredible. People get up and they say whatever they feel like without any makoros. And I was thinking, and I'm ready to jump up and say, no, you weren't thinking. That's your problem. You weren't thinking at all. You were completely not thinking. But, first of all, if I did that, I would be doing that all the time. And secondly, maybe I should. Maybe the kohen in me, once in a while it's happened, and, always get my teeth kicked in for it. But it's still kedai, because you have to fight for HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you believe that Chil Hashem takes place or an Avla takes place. But here it's not even that. It's like a total blindness to the Hamokam HaShatom Yitzhom Torah HaKadosh. All right, we'll stop here and we'll continue. Freilich and Chanukah, by the way.
Betty, how are we, for example, especially in this story where there's a lot of life lessons.